Welcome to another episode of the Deborah Health Report, where we dive into current health and medical topics to keep the Delaware Valley informed and updated. Last month, we focused on vascular disease, including how it's diagnosed, treated, and prevented. This month, we examine aortic valve disease, which causes the valve to the main pumping chamber of the heart to malfunction, and what happens to the body when it does. Here's Rasa Kay.
Hi, I'm Rasa Kay, and this month we examine aortic valve disease, which causes the valve to the main pumping chamber of the heart to malfunction. What goes wrong? Why does it go wrong? And what happens to your body when it does? We talk with Deborah interventional cardiologist Dr. Richard Kovach, and he starts us off with an architectural overview of the heart.
Think of it as a house with four rooms. Those are the four chambers of the heart. Four doors. Those are the valves that regulate the blood flow through the heart. It has a plumbing system, that's the coronary arteries, the arteries that feed blood to the heart muscle. And it has an electrical system, just like your house, and that's the tissue that makes your heart beat, or that can give you an irregular heart rhythm as well. So the aortic valve is the valve that separates the left ventricle, which is the main pumping chamber of the heart, from the aorta, which is the main blood vessel in the body. Normally that valve, each time the heart squeezes, that valve opens up, allows blood to flow out to the body, and then between beats, it closes back down again to prevent blood from coming back down into the ventricle and basically keep blood from going the wrong direction.
So the aortic valve is like the exit valve.
The exit valve from the main pumping chamber of the heart, yes.
What happens when that valve is damaged or diseased?
Well, there's two ways that valve can be diseased. One is becoming stiff. The medical term for that is aortic stenosis. Using that house analogy, think of it as a door that used to swing open and closed easily, but now is stuck and the hinges are rusted and it's not going to open properly. So with each beat, the valve leaflets normally open and then close again. But with aortic stenosis, the stiff valve, it's just not opening completely. That creates significant obstruction to blood flow, puts a big strain on the heart muscle to overcome that stiff valve. Now, just like you can have a door or window that's stuck, you can also have one that leaks and doesn't close properly. So the other abnormality with the aortic valve that we want to talk about is something called aortic insufficiency or aortic regurgitation. And that's where the valve doesn't close properly. So instead of that valve forming a nice tight seal when it closes, it's not forming a good seal and blood leaks back into the ventricle. So some of the blood is going forward, some of the blood is coming backwards. So that makes the heart also have to work harder to pump enough blood for the body to make up for the blood that's leaking back into the main chamber. So it kind of has to work doubly hard to pump enough blood out to the body to maintain a good blood pressure to provide the needs of the body.
Can you have both of these?
Yes, you absolutely can. They can exist separately, but sometimes when that valve is also stiff, it's deformed as well from the degeneration of the valve when it gets stiff. And so it can both not open properly and not close properly. So you can have aortic stenosis and aortic insufficiency existing both at the same time.
I've got just rusty hinges in my head from this conversation. Okay, so how common is aortic valve disease, and are either of these more common than the other?
Let's take aortic stenosis first. Aortic stenosis is present in about 12 to 12.5% of the patients over the age of 75. Typically, what we're referring to, and what's most common in the U.S., I should say, is what we call senile aortic stenosis, meaning over the years, the valve gets damaged and, for lack of a better term, worn out, so it becomes stiff. Now, that doesn't mean that when you develop aortic stenosis that something has to be done about it right away. Just like anything else, there's mild, moderate, or severe, or critical aortic stenosis. Like with most diseases, we first start with medical management for milder forms of the disease, and then think about valve replacement or valve repair once the disease progresses past a certain point where it becomes critical that you do something to keep the heart from developing significant dysfunction.
So you've got age and wearing out, other causes of aortic valve disease?
Again, in the United States, the most common form, again, is going to be aging, if you want to call it a risk, is as we all age, aging. That's the most common form is what we call senile aortic stenosis. Most of those patients you're going to see in their mid to early 70s and on, 70s, 80s, and 90s. If you see aortic stenosis in a patient who's in their 50s or 60s, that's usually due to what we call a bicuspid aortic valve, meaning normally when we're born and we develop, that valve has three leaflets that open and close, a tri-leaflet valve, if you will. You can have a bicuspid valve, which means there's only two leaflets. Now, when that happens, the flow through the valve is less uniform and it's much more turbulent. And over the years, that damages the valve sooner than would be just from aging. So if you see a patient in their 50s or 60s with severe aortic stenosis, again, this is in the United States, it's more likely going to be something like bicuspid valve that's degenerated sooner than just from plain aging. Throughout the world, probably the more common cause of aortic stenosis is rheumatic fever. You know, don't forget that we're very fortunate in this country that we have antibiotics. When somebody gets a strep throat, everybody has easy access to antibiotics. So rheumatic fever is one of the biggest risks for developing aortic stenosis or aortic insufficiency. When we look at the third world countries, South America, Africa, Asia, etc., it's much more common that you're going to have degeneration of the aortic valve related to rheumatic fever.
All right, so the bicuspid situation, would that be considered a congenital defect?
Yeah, I guess you could call it a congenital defect. It's not the normal structure of the valve. Maybe some genetic predisposition to it. It does run in families. So if your close relatives have a bicuspid aortic valve, there's a larger chance that other family members may also have a bicuspid aortic valve.
Other risk factors?
Other risk factors for aortic valve disease in general, one would be IV drug abuse and endocarditis, you know, having an infection on the heart valve. High blood pressure can damage the heart valve over time. Chronic kidney disease or kidney failure can help to accelerate damage to the valve, particularly calcification of the valve. For aortic insufficiency, again, related to hypertension often, is aortic dissection or a tear of the aorta, the inner lining of the aorta, which can extend back to the valve and cause a severe leak in the valve. So those are probably more the most common ones. Some less common ones are certain rare connective tissue disorders like Marfan's disease, where the structure of the aortas and vessels in general is not normal and are more prone to dilation and causing insufficiency.
Is this the kind of situation where untreated it could drop you? Or is it something that becomes more like a heart failure degeneration of well-being?
Well, the answer to that is yes. Okay, it can be both.
Okay.
You can have slow degeneration of the valve over time. Probably the most common symptoms of aortic valve disease are going to be fatigue, shortness of breath, heart failure, fluid building up in the lungs, fluid building up in the legs because the heart is not pumping efficiently. And as time goes on, those symptoms get worse and worse. Either insufficiency or stenosis can cause the, from all that strain on the heart muscle for pumping, can start the heart to enlarge and the heart start to fail and not pump as efficiently. So it can be a gradual progression to heart failure. Remarkably, some patients are surprisingly asymptomatic, meaning they don't get symptoms. I recently saw a marathon runner who had critical aortic stenosis and had absolutely no symptoms whatsoever. In that situation, that's somebody who can literally drop suddenly, because especially if they get dehydrated and their blood pressure falls, that can cause sudden death. The arteries that feed the heart muscle actually fill between beats, because you can imagine the heart is the muscle squeezing and tightening up and pushing the blood out. And then between each beat, the heart relaxes. And that's when the arteries fill. Now, if your blood pressure falls, blood flow to the arteries between beats also falls. Then the heart can't pump as efficiently because it's not getting the blood. Blood pressure falls further, next beat, next beat, next beat, and you get into a vicious cycle where your pressure continues to fall and the heart can't recover because the arteries that feed the heart muscle and help it squeeze and work aren't getting enough blood to squeeze properly. So you get into that a vicious cycle, and that's the folks who, for lack of a better word, drop suddenly.
Right. A basketball player with undiagnosed Marfan syndrome, right?
Exactly.
But you think these are the healthiest, right? They're doing everything for a strong heart and circulatory system. Can you hear stenosis or a valve problem? Can you?
Yes, absolutely.
How?
Patients will frequently tell me that, you know, I've been told I have a heart murmur. A heart murmur is the sound of turbulent blood flow or blood flowing the direction it's not supposed to be flowing. The first thing of any good physical exam for any physician to do is a good cardiac exam. And if a murmur is picked up at a young age, that should be really followed lifelong to monitor for any progression. And the more severe, in the case of aortic stenosis or aortic insufficiency, the more severe the disease, the louder the murmur. For aortic stenosis, you're going to hear a loud murmur that radiates up to the neck because that's the direction that the blood is going as it comes out of the valve up to the aorta. That murmur you're going to hear when the heart pumps. Then between beats, when the heart is relaxing and that valve's not closing properly, that's when you're going to hear the aortic insufficiency murmur where that blood is kind of flowing back into the main pumping chamber of the heart. Those murmurs have distinctly different sounds to them. And that actually can apply to any valve in the heart. Some are high-pitched murmurs, some are low-pitched murmurs. And depending on the location as we're moving around the chest to listen to the heart, we can get an idea of what the abnormality of the valve might be. Doesn't necessarily tell you the severity, you know, one for one, how severe it is. But obviously, the louder the murmur, if it's increasing over time, that's an indicator that the disease is getting worse.
Over time, how fast can it progress?
That's a good question. It's really variable from person to person. You know, it may progress slowly, it may progress rapidly. There's no way to really predict for sure. Perhaps aortic insufficiency, it may progress faster. You know, if you suddenly have a dissecting aneurysm, which can tear down into the valve, that's a sudden worsening of the murmur or the leak. If you rupture a valve leaflet, there's going to be a sudden worsening in the murmur. But generally speaking, it's a more gradual progression.
Can you prevent this from happening?
Unfortunately, we can't prevent ourselves from aging. Unfortunately, we can't change our anatomy if we have a bicuspid aortic valve. Things that are preventable that contribute to aortic stenosis or aortic insufficiency is good control of your blood pressure. Also, obviously, no IV drug abuse, that sort of thing. It's anything that where you might induce bacteria into the bloodstream that land on the valve and start to degenerate the valve. And also, quite frankly, good dental hygiene is also important because one of the most common sources for bacteria getting into the blood is the mouth, badly infected teeth, abscesses, and things like that.
Diagnosing it beyond the murmur, beyond the stethoscope, what else then do you do to get to the bottom of what's going on, how far along we are, and what needs to be done?
Other than starting out with a good physical exam and following that patient closely, is also taking a good history as well, you know, understanding the patient's symptoms. And then as we move on to diagnostic testing, probably the best study would be an echocardiogram, a sound wave picture of the heart. That's going to show us a number of things. Number one, the valve structure. You know, some people think that we can see the valve clearly on heart catheterization. Now, that can give us some information of the valve, but we actually don't see the valve well at a heart catheterization unless it's heavily calcified. An echocardiogram gives us excellent pictures of the heart valves and the structure of those valves. We can tell by blood flow, something called Doppler, through the valve if there's a leak or if there's stenosis. We can also tell if there's been some worsening of the heart muscle function because of the valve. We can look at the way the heart muscle is squeezing, which, again, over time, as I mentioned, either those conditions can put a severe strain on the heart muscle. The heart muscle can start to weaken, not squeeze as well. It can start to dilate up as the heart muscle gets damaged further and further. So the next best step is an echocardiogram once you're suspicious that the patient has significant valvular disease.
So there are stages you mentioned. Could you kind of identify the stages and what's happening at each stage and how a patient might be feeling at that stage?
Sure. It's, you know, we kind of break it up into stages, but like any disease state, there's a gradual progression. Talking about stenosis in particular, let's start there, the amount of calcification on the valve. We also measure pressure gradient across that valve. Normally, when the heart contracts and that valve's open, not to get into a in-depth discussion of fluid dynamics, but the pressure should be the same on either side of the valve when that valve is open. If your blood pressure is 110 systolic in the aorta, the blood pressure should be 110 systolic inside the ventricle. They should match. As that valve becomes stiffer and stiffer, the heart has to generate more pressure. to overcome that stiff valve and get it to open up and start the blood moving forward. So you start to get what we call pressure gradient, where the pressure in the aorta is here, but the pressure in the ventricle is up here because it's having to generate so much force to get the blood flowing through the stiff valve. We also look at the velocity of the blood flow through the valve. Think of you're watering your garden with a garden hose, and you stick your thumb over the end of the garden hose, and the water speeds up, right? Because the same amount of water is trying to get through a smaller space in the same amount of time. So the only way to do that is to move faster. So when we look at the velocity of the blood flow through the valve, as the valve becomes stiffer and stiffer, the velocity increases. The classic cutoff has been 4 meters per second as we measure it with the Doppler on the echocardiogram. The reason we take in so many factors is that as the heart muscle weakens and can't squeeze in hard, that velocity may drop. The patient may still have severe obstruction, but the velocity is lower because the heart just can't generate that much pressure. So we have terms that we use like low flow, low gradient aortic stenosis, because the valve is still tight, the heart just can't overcome it and generate that much of a pressure or that much of a flow through the valve. Sometimes the heart muscle becomes weaker and dilates, gets very thick. It's just like a weightlifter, you know, building muscles from working very hard. The heart muscle can get very thick, in which case the cavity of the main pumping chamber is small. So you can get something what we call paradoxical low flow, low gradient aortic stenosis, where the squeeze is still good, but there's just not that much blood in the cavity. So there's not that much of a gradient or that much of an increase in flow through the valve. So we have to take in all those things into consideration to determine whether it's mild, moderate, or severe. Mild and moderate we manage medically as best we can. It's when the disease gets to the severe state where we think about replacing the valve.
So can you reverse aortic valve disease?
Not really. You know, it's a physical obstruction. You know, if you have a blowout in the tire, you can't fix the tire. You have to replace it. And it's the same sort of thing here. No medicine can make the stenosis or the leak go away. Now, when there's leaking, we can do things like lower the blood pressure. If you can imagine, if there's very high blood pressure, there's more blood that's going to leak back through that valve because the pressure is higher in the aorta and it's going to push back into the pumping chamber. So we lower the blood pressure.
And that would be pharmaceutical.
That would be pharmaceutical. So, you know, we aggressively lower the blood pressure. But generally speaking, once a valve is damaged, it's a physical abnormality of the valve that then has to be addressed.
Is that a time bomb situation then?
It can be a time bomb situation if you don't address it properly. One of the things that I think is extremely important is that we not infrequently see patients that suddenly show up with severe aortic stenosis. Now, something happened between I'm doing fine and I have severe aortic stenosis, whether they haven't seen their doctor or their caretaker wasn't aware of their murmur or wasn't paying attention to the murmur or listening to the patient's symptoms. That's why it's so important for close, once you have a murmur and some suggestion that there's an abnormality with a valve, to follow those patients very, very closely over time.
What does that mean, follow very closely?
You know, regular physical exam, periodic echocardiograms, which is the easiest way to tell us whether or not there's progression. We can look, again, see if the valve looks worse than it did last time or whether that heart muscle chamber is getting weaker.
And is that once a year, twice a year, quarterly, monthly? I mean, how do you make that determination?
Again, if it's very mild disease, maybe every 5 years. You know, if it's moderate disease, probably once a year. If it's getting to the point where the patient's starting to have a lot of symptoms and it's getting severe, probably every 3 to 6 months. So it depends on the degree of severity. The more severe it gets, the more frequently you want to follow those patients.
That's Deborah interventional cardiologist Dr. Richard Kovach. We'll continue our conversation in our next podcast and get the 411 on how failing aortic valves are replaced and what that's like for the patient. It drops the first Wednesday of the month. I'm Rasa Kay.
You can always listen to all of the informative Deborah Doctor interviews at DeborahHealthReport.com. Schedule an appointment at DemandDeborah.org.